welcome to Chit Chat Money. On this show, hosts Ryan Henderson and Brett Schaefer interview industry experts and riff on the world of investing. As a quick reminder, Chit Chat Money is a CCM Media Group podcast. Ryan and Brett are also general partners at Arch Capital, and Arch Capital may have positions in the securities discussed in this podcast. Anything discussed on Chit Chat Money by Ryan or Brett or any other podcast guests is not formal advice or recommendation. Now please enjoy this episode.
Okay, welcome in. This is the Thursday deep dive episode. We got Ian Gray on the line, or on Zoom, not on the line. And we have Ryan here too, as always. We're talking Formula One. And to introduce it, I'm going to ask Ian, Ryan, did you guys watch the documentary at all?
Yes.
And what were your thoughts?
I watched the first episode, and my thoughts are I'm going to start binging it very soon. Nice. It totally was hitting all my buttons. I love sports and love competition, and it was an exciting first episode, and I'm looking forward to getting more into it.
The British announcers, they got good accents.
Of course.
Ryan?
Yeah, I liked it. I think I watched the first three or four episodes. It actually gives you a decent grasp of how the business works, too.
Yeah, that's a fun part of it, too, yeah.
Or at least how the league works.
How the teams get paid.
Right.
Yeah. Any guys you have any favorite drivers, favorite teams? I know Ryan's a Ferrari guy.
He's been into
the stock back in the day.
I like Lewis Hamilton, I think.
You're going you're just going for number one.
We talked about, we'll mention this. Greg Maffei has a great life. I think Lewis Hamilton's got a great life as well.
He's done some best of all time. Ian, I know you've only watched one episode.
Yeah, I'm going to have to get a little deeper, but I'll get back to you guys on that one.
All right. Well, we're going to be talking Formula One, but before we do, we got to talk about our sponsor, Seven Investing. And there was big news out recently.
Huge.
Their prices are rising in July. We're still going to be doing the same promo code with them, CCM. Get $10 off your first month. But if you want to get in now, it'll only be $17 a month for the foreseeable future. So if you're thinking of subscribing, this is the right time to go in. They're trying to do well by their early subscribers. Look on the website for all the details as well. But if you want to use our code CCM, $10 off, 7 stock picks a month. Great tracker by all the team. Ryan?
Yeah, and this isn't just us pump faking you guys either to like get you to sign up now before the price hike comes in. But they've added a lot of stuff, and they have sort of this library of content now compared to when they started last year. So I thought this might even be a little overdue. But you've got a month now to go look at all those recs, look at all the different articles that they put up on all their different recommendations.
Yeah, even with the price rise, it is still well worth the price you pay. But Ryan, do you want to introduce Formula One?
Yeah, so the structure with Formula One is a little wonky. So it's a tracking stock of Liberty Media, who owns Formula One. And then the Formula One company holds exclusive rights to the Formula One World Championship. So when you look up the ticker, it's going to be, there's like F, the one for Formula One is FWONA. But,
and there's B and K too. There's three different, it's kind of complicated.
Yeah. And so it gets, that structure part gets a little complicated, and we're going to talk about it briefly, or Ian will, under the governance section, but just the bulk of this is going to be about the business that sort of underlies the tracking stock. But Formula One, the league, conducts a 9-month long season that holds roughly 20 or more races, which they call Grand Prix, all around the globe. There's ones in Monaco. I think there's one, we'll talk about it here. I think there's one in Texas,
One in Austin. Yeah. And they just signed a 10-year deal with Miami.
There's some in the Middle East. There are some in Rio, or one in Rio. It's
Australia,
all over the place.
Singapore, yeah.
Yeah, and there's 10 different teams. Each team has two drivers, so 20 drivers altogether. And they're competing for all these different Grand Prix. You get points towards the Ultimate Championship. Well, there's two Ultimate Championships. There's the Drivers' Championship, and then there's the Constructors' Championship. And so some of the teams, if you're trying to picture who they are, it's like Ferrari, Mercedes, Red Bull, McLaren, Haas, which
that's
is
the American team. They're not doing too well right now. But.
And then Formula One generates revenue through race promotions, broadcasting rights, ads, sponsorships. But the largest payout is their payout to the teams. So the league pays out money to the teams, and that kind of makes up the bulk of their cost of goods sold. when you look at it on an income statement. And then the teams get a budget or allocation money from the league that they get, and there's prize money for winning. And am I getting all that right?
Yeah.
The budgets now come in thanks to Liberty Media.
I guess they're funding all the upfront costs, stuff like that. Yeah, and they make money through broadcast TV rights, sponsorships, ticket sales, kind of like a traditional sports league would.
Yeah, and not to overcomplicate things, the ultimate goal is just to increase viewership. If you increase viewership, revenue rises because it goes through all those different things where you have more value for advertisers, you have broadcasting rights are more expensive, and so
more tickets.
Right. But I'll get into history. Grand Prix motor racing across Europe really started in the 20s and 30s. And the formula basically just means it's the set of rules that cars have to follow. You can't have like one car with rocket ship thrusters on the back and then like one that's poorly made, or there's certain structured rules. And then after World II, Formula One was actually created. They had plans to make it, but the war took precedence.
Yeah, you said World II. It's World War II, right?
Yeah.
World War II. Okay.
Is that what I said?
Yeah.
All right. And the first World Championship actually took place in 1950 in the UK, so they just celebrated their 70th anniversary. And in the early days, the big manufacturers weren't really that dissimilar from the big manufacturers today. Ferrari, Alfa Romeo, I think has a team through.
Yeah, they're part of else. Red Bull possibly. I'm not an expert on the sport, but yeah.
Right, and then there's Mercedes. Maserati was big. I don't think, are they still in it?
I don't think so.
Some of the names have kind of changed, but they'd all kind of competed before the war, and then they'd made this formalized league afterwards. But anyway, racing kind of grew as a big sport. And then between 2000 and 2015, Formula One struggled a bit, and it was plagued a lot by political controversy. There was apparently at one point, I think in 2008, there was like an intentional crash, stuff like that to kind of, it was not what you want from a league, a sports league, I guess you could say. And Liberty Media, which was run by Greg Maffei and which John Malone serves as the chairman for, acquired a controlling interest in Formula One in early 2017. And they've since, I believe, implemented a budget, or they're trying to implement a budget to make the competition more competitive. Because if you look at it, there's times when teams go on runs where they win like 10 in a row or like 4 years in a row, and they have the highest budget. They can spend the most on the cars. They can spend for the best drivers, stuff like that. They're trying to essentially put a salary cap on it.
Yeah. It's kind of like if the NBA, like a sport where if you have the most talent or you have the best stuff, you're probably going to win if it was like baseball with unlimited spending. So that makes it really uncompetitive, and they're trying to reverse that. So.
Okay. But that's pretty much it for the history. I don't know when the tracking stock went public.
I think it was around 2017. So it's been a few years now. Ian, did you have anything, or I'm going to hit industry? Nope. Okay. I'll hit industry. So I'm basically kind of give an overview of how big the sport is right now. So according to the company, in 2019, it hit almost 1.9 billion views across all platforms in the 2019 season. And that was the highest since 2012. Top markets currently are Brazil, Germany, Italy, UK, and the Netherlands. So it's a huge sport in Europe. 2020 was a tough year, as we'll get into with earnings and stuff like that. So I saw a 10% dip in viewership. And, you know, competition, it's hard to quantify with a stock like this or a company like this. You know, NASCAR is kind of a competitor in America. IndyCar is a competitor in America. And there's MotoGP, which is motorcycle stuff. But they're really all different sports, so it's kind of hard to tell. I guess, you know, in America, which they're trying to push into a lot, they're going to come up against NASCAR and IndyCar and stuff like that. And then some other things investors might want to look at but may or may not mean anything are their social media following. So Instagram is at 13.3 million. Twitter is at 5.7 million. And YouTube is at 5.5 million subs. And the YouTube channel has over 3 billion views. I think that's a good tracker of kind of how popular the sport is worldwide. Ian, do you want to talk about management, ownership, and governance? Because it's complicated with this company.
Yep, it is. But I think we can make at least enough sense of it to move forward. So as we've been talking about, Liberty Media owns 100% stake in Formula One. So they're the sole owner of Formula One. They own a variety of other things as well, including SiriusXM, the Atlanta Braves, and the real estate related with the Atlanta Braves. So they own quite a bit. And what they've done with their company is actually broken the company up into three tracking stocks. And so they have the Braves Group, which primarily consists of the Atlanta Braves. They have the Liberty SiriusXM Group, which primarily consists of SiriusXM. I think Pandora might still be in there. There was something else in there that I recognized, but anyways, kind of more music radio type related stuff. And then they have the Formula One group, which includes Formula One. There's some other stuff in it. Like, they own a little bit of actually the Braves group. There's a little bit of like cross ownership there. And then they own Clear, or just a small stake in Clear. It must've been some sort of venture capital investment. That's the thing at the airports now where you can supposedly walk through faster.
Surveillance. The thing right. They're sneaking into our brains.
It allows you to cut the line, right?
To cut the line, yeah.
Upload your, give all your information, give your eyeballs to the government. That's what I think.
Right, exactly. So anyways, they own a few different things in there. They also own like a stake in the Denver Nuggets arena. And they own some of their own SPAC. They own part of an IndyCar team. So anyways, it's not just Formula One that's part of the Formula One group that this tracking stock that we're talking about today is, but it's primarily Formula One. So the chairman of the overarching company, Liberty Media, is John Malone. The company's CEO is Greg Matthews, as we've mentioned. The Formula One CEO was initially Chase Carey following the acquisition, who was an American who had experience in kind of the media world. I think he worked for AT&T and a couple others. And he really kind of, there was some skepticism about him when he first took over Formula One because he was an American, didn't really know the sport that well, but he really tried to not Americanize the sport. That was the fear, but try and kind of modernize the sport and equal the playing field a little bit. And so he implemented some stuff like you were talking about, Ryan, this kind of salary cap type idea so that he talked about it being the Leicester chance, right? That some underdog could actually win every once in a while, like in the Premier League a bunch of years ago. So he really kind of pushed forward some efforts like that. He also, increased the value of a lot of the teams immediately by creating a bond necessary for new teams. And so I think it was $200 million. So basically increasing the prestige of the teams and the cost to start a team, which then raised the value of all the other teams. And so anyways, he did some things for the sport that the owners were really happy with. He just stepped down as CEO and Stefano Domenicali was made CEO. And he is more of a Formula One insider. So he was just made the CEO in January of 2021. He was the team principal for Team Ferrari, which is kind of like correct me if I'm wrong, but that's kind of like the manager of the team or the general manager of a team in American sports. And he was made the team principal of Ferrari, and he was in that position from 2008 to 2014 and had quite a bit of success during that run. I think they won maybe four championships. And then the CEO of Lamborghini, the car company, from 2016 to 2020. And so I've been very involved in that world. Whereas Carey was more of an outsider, but made kind of really well-regarded efforts to level the playing field in the sport. Stefano is known for knowing the sport inside and out and is more of an insider and hopefully going to be good for taking the league to the next level.
Yeah, that's fascinating. It's interesting to see what they're going to do with this new management team. I think that was a great overview of the complications. We gave you a tough task this week, Ian. I'll hit the valuation quick. Market cap is about $9.34 billion from when I was looking up. There's three different tickers, but I was looking at the FWONA one. Enterprise values end up fairly similar, but again, make sure to do your own research, get all this stuff down, because I'm not going to be able to get it covered entirely in the podcast. Enterprise value is about $11.3 billion. All 2020 valuation ratios are totally screwed up. Their revenue got hit really, really bad. So you're not really betting on trailing 12-month multiples here. But if we want to base it off of the 2019 income statement, EV to revenue is 5.6. EV to operating cash flow is 38. I was using Coifin. They use their separate EBITDA number, but it's like operating income, except instead of earnings. So they kind of do it. They call it OEBITDA. I think that's just their internal thing. So their EV to OEBITDA, OIBDA, was about 23.4 based on the 2019 numbers. And the big question is, you know, if slash when financials return to 2019 numbers and continue growing. That could be this year, might be the year after, who knows? But I'll keep that simple. Ryan, do you want to hit earnings?
Yeah, and I'm going to use the 2019 numbers as well, just so you get sort of a normalized view. Because if you think about 2020, a lot of the races, there weren't a lot of fans there, which is a huge part of Formula One's business.
They only had 17, so some of that was shut down.
Only 17 races. Typically, I believe this year they're supposed to do 23.
Yep.
So I'll just dig into the numbers. They had $2 billion in revenue in 2019. That was up 11% from the year before. They had $450 million in adjusted operating income. That was about 20% from the year before. And then operating cash flow was about $300 million. So that puts them at an operating cash flow margin of just below 15%. The company has about 31% gross margins because it's a little bit like Spotify in that the league has to pay out the teams the way Spotify has to pay out rights holders. That's kind of the way I think about it. And that's always going to be that. I'll talk about it later, but it limits a little bit of operating leverage because those teams are always going to want a slice of the pie as a percentage because they see it as them earning that money. That doesn't mean the league as a whole can't grow. But there was almost $450 million in depreciation and amortization costs. It's a little hard to tell what that was from because they didn't actually break it out. And then, so I just say, basically just pay attention to operating cash flow and free cash flow.
It's complicated. You got to do your own research, but it's one too much information for just to show.
Yeah. And there's not a whole lot of stock-based compensation. They had 21 events in 2019 and they're expecting to have 23 events in 2021. That's just added revenue with each event. But there's sort of a cap to that because logistically they can't ship the cars to and from place to place to have like 40 Grand Prix in a year.
Yeah, max is going to be 23-ish, 25 maybe.
Yeah, and so there's sort of a threshold there. And the 9-month season, they have to get it all done in that time.
Yep. All right. Ian, do you want to hit balance sheet?
Yep. And before I dive into the balance sheet, I'll just make one last comment on tracking stocks. You're probably tired of hearing about it now, but they were popular in the 90s. From what I've read, to kind of help companies break out the results of their more traditional business and then their more like aggressive internet businesses, and so that they could get a higher multiple on their internet business and really show people the results they were getting. And so that's what they've traditionally been used for. In this case, it's kind of just to see the different operating groups here. But what it means is that sometimes these balance sheet items, if I'm understanding this correctly, sometimes these balance sheet items can actually move around between the tracking stocks because they're still all under one company. And so you really want to do your research here to understand the management team, because at the end of the day, you're really trusting Greg Maffei, the CEO of Liberty Media Group, to correctly allocate things to Formula One Group, and that you're trusting his decision making at the end of the day. So that being said, and that some of these balance sheet items have actually changed in the last couple of years, but currently the Formula One Group has cash of about $1.7 billion on the balance sheet. They have goodwill and other intangibles of nearly $8 billion. So it actually makes up the majority of assets are these intangible assets, which isn't something I'd love to see. And it means that some of that type of stuff could get written down and be a hit to GAAP earnings. That's not a huge concern in a case like this because we're not valuing it based on GAAP earnings. It's actually generally not making money on a GAAP basis because of all the depreciation and amortization. And then they have debt of about $3.55 billion, which is a little more concerning. They have most of that is a term loan at about a 3.5% interest rate, and it's tied to the LIBOR rate. But they say they have interest swaps too. So if interest rates were going to rise, it would stay closer to that 3.5% interest rate. And then they also have convertibles are a portion of that debt. From what I could read, it looked like they would not be converting unless there's some significant appreciation in the stock. But you should also do your own research there. The major concern for me on this balance sheet is just the amount of debt. They've only got about 2x EBITDA to interest expense in a normalized year of 2019. And so they're paying a big chunk of that EBITDA, that cash flow and interest, which it works. It's fairly highly levered. It works if EBITDA is steady. But if they were to have a prolonged downturn, it would be a little bit of a problem, I think. It seemed to me, and it's a different type of business than we're typically looking at, but it seemed to me like there's a lot of debt on this business.
Yeah, you got to expect cash flow is going to grow for sure. It reminds me a bit, and it's not apples to apples, but it reminds me a bit of IAC and Match Group. Match Group was their best asset. You could maybe argue Formula One is now Liberty Media's best asset. And with Match Group, they're like, all right, we'll give you $3 billion in debt when you guys leave us. They're like, shareholders are like, all right, and I guess we'll take it. But no, I guess it's how it goes.
I mean, management with this company is not a stranger to debt, and they've been in this
Cowboys.
Yeah. They've been in this business, at least John Malone, for a long time. And they really understand the media landscape.
If there's anyone you don't have to worry about, debts, these guys. I mean, they had such a track record. So yeah. All right. Let's hit the ad break and we'll get back and talk more of our analysis, I guess, of Formula One. Okay, welcome back. Next up, we got product experience. We're not racers, I guess, so it's tough to get the product experience, but any anecdotal evidence, Ian, you have anything on this?
Like I mentioned at the top of the show, I really love the first episode of the Netflix documentary, and I'm looking forward to diving more into it. It's the type of sport I could definitely see myself getting into. If I have enough time to squeeze another sport into my life, but it was, it's really cool, I think.
Yeah, so it's one of those, I mean, it can be pretty casual. It seems like there's only maybe an event once every 2 weeks on a Sunday morning, spending an hour watching. Yeah, I mean, anecdotally, a lot of people I know have been watching it now. So I don't know. Ryan, anything?
I mean, the event in Monaco looked like heaven. That just
looks like they spend a lot of money, which is good to Formula One.
Yeah. Anytime there's a big race, there's just something sort of monumental that it kind of brings this like feeling that like everyone's eyes are on it, especially when you put it in big cities like Rio and there's
Singapore.
It's fun to watch. Even as someone who's not that into cars, it's fun to watch.
Yeah. After 3 months, I'd say I'm not an expert, but you can pretend to be one on Finchwit. Ian, do you have anything?
Yeah. I would just say too, I think one of the things that's interesting to me, and I haven't, like I said, I haven't spent a lot of time studying this sport, but it's just how much strategy there is. And the race is almost a formality at the end of the day, right? They're doing all this work up front to try and get a good position for qualifying. And yeah, you can move around in the race and you have to be on your game in the race or you're going to lose position. But how much work up front there is to kind of determine where your spot is in the league. It's almost like there's these huge teams of hundreds or even thousands of people working on the cars and trying to get everything fine tuned. And it just, there's so much strategy in it that it's really interesting to me in addition to the car aspect of it.
And how important people other than the driver are.
The engineering team. Yeah.
Yeah, man. You watch it on the show, like someone forgot to tighten a bolt on a tire enough and suddenly the race is done. Right.
Your heart sinks. You feel so bad for them. And then I think, the qualifying is big too. They're trying to make that Saturday event, it's more of a thing. I think they're changing up the rules on that, doing like a 100-kilometer sprint or something. I don't know the exact rules, but they're trying to make that more exciting. All right, let's not belabor that section. Competitive advantages. Ian, what do you have? I know it's interesting. It's a sport. So what are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, it's going to turn out I am kind of going to belabor that point because my competitive advantage is adrenaline. It's kind of a bizarre one, but I think it's real. I watched the first couple minutes or the whole episode of that Netflix series, and you just see the car zooming by and it's just like, wow, those guys are flying. You have the cockpit camera, you're seeing these cars spin around the corners, spin out, even bump each other sometimes. And it's just, it gets your heart rate going. The sounds, the imagery, the drama, it's just exciting. And I don't think this is entertainment that's going to lose its luster. And especially as they continue to innovate, there's just so much adrenaline there. It's an exciting sport.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's really something, Ryan.
I'll add, their top speed in Formula One is faster than NASCAR and stuff like that. And I've heard from people that were never car fans or anything like that, never race car type fans. They're like, oh, that's not a sport. There's just a bunch of people driving. And then you go to an event, and you're like, okay, that is insanely hard to do. And it's
and they're all tight, like
capturing.
Yeah, they're a foot away from each other, clipping them. Yeah. I mean, Ryan, what's yours? I think we all have similar competitive advantages.
It's an iconic brand. You can't replicate what they've done. And the history and culture is a huge part of it. It's a lot like any big sports league. It's really hard to just, the only way I think a league dies is on its own.
Or if like the number one team leaves.
Yeah, but you've yeah, and it's just like it's you have to sort of kill the league. Like you have to do things to sort of sabotage yourself instead of like if I just started a Formula One competitor, like no one would care.
I mean, even like Major League Baseball has made plenty of blunders over the last decade, and there's no one even close to competing with them. And like Ferrari is like the Yankees. If they decided to leave, that would be hit like half of the fans are Ferrari fans. So,
yeah.
But I mean, there's no way Ferrari would leave.
Exactly. All right. What about you?
Yeah. I mean, I just think, you know, just like you guys, history, rights, scale, you know, it's hard to quantify, but it's like with other sports, football, soccer, basketball, all these leagues, switching costs are extremely high for everyone in it. You need everyone to leave, which means that you can't just have one person leave. You need, you know, anyone that has any part of the value chain. You know, the big question is not really, is the durability of the growth. It's not the moat. It's the industry is durable and there's a moat, but the question is how much can they grow as a sports league? And I guess we'll hit that next with future growth opportunities. Ian, what do you have here?
For me, Formula One is just a content machine. The Netflix documentary, I think, is a great start of that and just really shows the power that telling a good story and having an exciting sport can have for you. But the possibilities are out there. They're already doing some of this, but podcasts, movies, esports, merchandise, even with the rise in sports gambling in the United States, they've been citing a lot of their fantasy numbers and how many people are playing fantasy Formula One.
I would like that. Yeah, that'd be fun.
Yeah. And there's just so much you can do when you have a good content product like that and so many different ways you can monetize it. And as far as the esports goes, they have a Formula One video game. And in 2020, there was 273,000 participants in the Pro Series qualifying rounds of the Formula One esports league. 273,000. That number jumped up to nearly 500,000 in 2021. So rapidly growing. It's the type of sport that really lends itself, I think, to esports. Yeah. People can drive. You can get these big driving simulators, and they have like a Formula One league where the esports drivers are starting to become known themselves. And it's really, I think it's a cool thing. And it's also something that the real drivers, and I know NASCAR experimented with this a little bit of having the real drivers actually drive in simulators during the pandemic. And I think Formula One has that capability too, where the drivers can drive in these simulators and play the video game as well, almost as well as they can probably drive because of the similarities. And so it seems like a great fit for an esport, and they're really making good moves there. And I think they'll just continue to crank out good content and be able to monetize in a ton of different ways.
Yeah.
Or go ahead.
I wouldn't be surprised if gaming broadly made up a decent portion of its revenue in the next 5 to 10 years.
I put two notes on that. EA Sports just bought the rights to Formula One. I think that gives them a lot of, you might not think it matters who owns it, but EA Sports has the best track record of building these global sports video games. I think it's a good hands with them. And they just announced this small thing with Free Fire, the big C Limited game that's huge in Southeast Asia and Latin America, I believe. I don't know anything about the game, but they did something with Formula One to get like McLaren drivers and the McLaren cars on there. There's a lot of opportunity for, you know, F1 stuff and maybe Roblox or stuff like that, racing games, licensing for all the, you know, the Formula One styles and items and stuff like that.
Formula One, Mario Kart.
Mario Kart, yeah, that's a little different. We'll see, but yeah. Right. Ryan, what are yours?
Getting a Chinese driver into Formula One, so Find Me Value. He had some good slides on the company, and I recommend going and looking at it. And this is a growth opportunity that he talked about, but it could spur a lot of adoption of Formula One across China, since it gives Chinese consumers sort of a home team to root for. And right now, I'm probably going to butcher this name, but Guan Zhao is currently in Formula 2 or F2, and he's working to secure his license to drive an F1. More viewers means more revenue, and using China as a market that's a huge untapped market.
For sure. And think about it, if you were, say, listening to this, you're from the United States, if there was a U.S. driver, which there isn't one currently, I mean, you'd probably root for him or her. I guess it's just there's no woman in it right now. But
it's kind of like the Olympics.
It's the Olympics. It's why I think there's a huge want in soccer to get the U.S. team up and running because they want that U.S. fan base.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same type of deal. I'll hit mine. It is making the move into the United States. So there's a race coming to Miami in 2022 with a 10-year agreement. Seems like the perfect city. They could probably do Vegas and Miami. And that seems like the perfect combo. Right now, the other one's in Austin. That seems solid, but I mean, it seems like Vegas and Miami are the two best ones.
Yeah.
And the Netflix series did create a rapidly growing fan base. You've seen recently, this is a bit anecdotal, Barstool with the number one sports podcast had Christian Homer on the show. So they're going to get their fans into it. The Ringer, one of their popular shows, like the Ryan Russillo show. And I think it's like third or one of the top five sports podcasts is getting into it as well. So that could bring extra growth for a younger audience. It's really hard to quantify it, but the sport, I don't think there's any way around it. It's definitely growing in the United States right now. Yeah. All right. Highlights and lowlights to close things out. Ian, what are your thoughts?
The highlights for me start with the sport and the excitement of it. You can't really match that, at least in any of the other, in any of my other holdings, about just how cool it is, like how cool of a business it is, right? It's just cool in every aspect of that word. A couple more highlights, though, or if the sport were to expand to the US and China in a big way and gain some big viewership there, there's a lot of potential upside in those markets. And it's a content machine, as I mentioned. I think it's got some, it's going to be a steady grower, I think, with some upside potential if China and the US really take off. EBITDA margins of about 20%, forecasted to grow to about 26% by 2023. So even some improving profitability in the next couple of years forecasted. The lowlights for me, the big thing is the debt, just a lot of debt. And I don't know if I understand the business well enough to be comfortable with paying half their EBITDA towards debt every single year. And then secondly, I think another potential lowlight is that the sport just doesn't catch on in China and America. And so it never has that really big upside that it could have. But anyways.
Yeah, I guess we mentioned the big variable costs from the team, but they do have some fixed costs with logistics. Those are going to probably stay around the same each year from traveling people everywhere and then the fixed costs of running the event. So that could help with the EBITDA margins.
Yeah, and I think the other piece of the EBITDA margins is just the more they do, they get this tangential revenue from the stuff, from the content, from the Netflix documentary, from the esports. That's higher margin business than the actual... than the core business of the racing and selling tickets and stuff like that. So I think that's where some of that EBITDA margin growth is coming to.
For sure. Ryan, what are your thoughts?
It's a super unique asset. There is sort of that moat that we talked about. It seems like it's one of those businesses that's actually really enjoyable to be a part of. My low light though is there's limited operating leverage just because you're capped on the amount of races you can do. You have to pay out a certain amount to your players or teams. And you can't just add a bunch of more teams because that kind of ruins the prestige or the value of being in the league. So it's a little bit like Spotify in that way. I'd also say I'm not a fan of leagues being public. I'm not a fan of when sports intermingle with the public markets. And the reason I say that is because it's sort of when push comes to shove, the integrity of the game is always going to supersede shareholders and the fans are always going to be more important. And while it might be fun, Super League's like the prime example. When you try to maximize sort of revenue for whoever has money invested in the business, it's real easy to just point your finger and say, we're not corporate. This is a sports league. There's just that risk, I guess, with Formula One.
Yeah, for sure. Highlights for me, growing brand with minimal competition, like you guys said. They have a new Concord agreement, which is the team and league agreement like each league has. They just call it the Concord agreement. And the details are unknown, like a lot of these things, but management said it's a better deal for them. It goes through 2025 and it gives them a lot more upside, I think. And again, these are unknowns. So you can't really bank on this. If say the league grows a lot, there might be a tiny bit of say, all right, the teams get less of the percentage as you get bigger, but there's still that variable cost in line. I like the growth of the sport in the U.S. Growth of sports broadcasting rights around the globe is very important to them. Those are very valuable assets. You can see ESPN Plus or somewhere like that throwing a lot of money to get Formula One exclusive on its platform. Getting that Chinese driver could be good. They have F1 TV that is going direct to consumer. That's an OTT service for the diehard fans. And then with their deal in the US, and I don't know where, ESPN might just be in the US. So they have a short deal with ESPN right now that can be renegotiated with the growth of, say, Drive to Survive and Miami in 2022. So that opens them up to way better broadcasting rights in 2022 and 2023. That can give them a step change up in revenue, depending on how well things do in the US. Lowlights for me, you know, ceiling on the growth for a sports league. As an investor, you're basically hoping for like low growth and something that's possibly a permanent asset, something that can be around for 100 years and that they'll continually buy back shares as kind of Liberty Media or, these type of, this management team, this group of big shareholders is known to do. All right, more or less interested. Ian, kick things off for us.
I'm less interested, but it's a tough one for me because I like the sport, I think. So far, everything I know about the sport, I like it. It's interesting to me. I think it's going to continue to grow in popularity, but I'm not sure it has enough growth in it to really be a great grower. And I'm not sure it's has enough of a... it doesn't seem like a bargain right now either, valuation-wise. Like, it seems reasonably priced, but it just doesn't quite have... a super attractive return to me. Now, that being said, I'm not going to get on anybody for investing in this. It seems like it's the type of thing. Sports leagues over time, just about every single one of them has gotten rapidly more valuable over the last 30, 40, 50 years. And a lot of that's due to like TV rights and stuff like that. And if there's going to be a catalyst like that that continues to grow, Formula One could be a huge winner, but it just doesn't quite get there for me.
Yeah, Ryan?
I'm a little less interested. I would love to be Greg Maffei or a large shareholder in the company. I'd love to be John Malone. That life seems great, but I don't know if I'd want to. I don't think you'd get in that position by owning more mature assets like this. I guess I'm just, there's limited growth.
Yeah. Well, I'd say it's growth. I mean, you guys might be underestimating the growth. The NFL could be worth $100 billion. If F1, they have close to 500 million fans now, that gets to a billion, like some of the most popular leagues, and they really get the numbers better. Yeah, there's less events than the NFL. I think there's potential, but yes, there is the limited upside. There is the debt. I'd say I'm slightly more interested just because of the permanency of the asset. Valuation's tough. Valuation is definitely tough. You can kind of maybe see through to where they're trading at maybe 2023 multiples, like 15 times earnings maybe if they execute. But with something that's low growth at a higher multiple, that does make it tough. If say, right now we're young, we're a little broke, but say if you had a fun portfolio, stuff like Ferrari, Callaway for me.
This would be in there.
This is
sure.
So in the fun portfolio. I have a friend that he may or may not be listening, but he's just like, I'm going to invest in Callaway, Ferrari, Formula One. And I was like, that sounds fun. Go right ahead and do that. That fun portfolio, this makes it in.
Yeah. And with if they hit on some of those growth opportunities we talked about, this could definitely outperform the market.
For sure. Ian, anything else before we close things out? Nope. All right. Well, that's going to do it for this episode. As always, use our code CCM.
Stock for next week.
Right. Ryan.
Corsair Gaming. Corsair Gaming. They supply premium streamer, like equipment and gear and stuff like that. So PCs, keyboards, mics. There's software to it as well. Okay, software component. Kind of interesting. It's a little mini conglomerate in that space.
We like the video game industry. It is interesting. All right. Yeah. False start on the end here. As always, make sure to subscribe to 7 Investing. Use our code CCM to get $10 off your first month. Remember, we are not financial advisors. Anything we say on this show is not formal advice or recommendation. Ryan and I are general partners at Arch Capital. Clients in Arch Capital may hold securities discussed in this podcast. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you next time.